Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and I'm flying solo this week. Carlos is disposed, so you've just got my dulcet tones for this show. Anyway, I'm just got off watching UFC Vegas 28, headlined by Jairzinho Rozenstruik versus Augusto Sakai. Quite a lot of prelims to get through, so I'll quickly fire through these. So we started the day with Claudio Puelles picking up the decision against Jordan Levitt in the lightweight division. Then we moved into another decision in the featherweight with Sean Woodson getting the win over Youssef Zalal. Heading to the women's flyweight division, and Manon Fiorot picked up the second round knockout of Tabitha Richie. We got a no contest in the next fight, Alan Patrick and Mason Jones in the lightweight division, due to Alan being unable to continue after an accidental eye poke by Mason Jones. Going after that, we were in the featherweight division, and we had Kamuela Kirk picking up the win over Makwan Amirkani. Then after that, we had Muslim Salikov taking the victory from Francisco Trinaldo by decision in the welterweight. Heavyweight Tanner Boza was defeated by Ilya Latifi by a decision. We was meant to get, for the featured prelim, Montana De La Rosa versus Ariana Lipska, but that got actually bumped to the main card because just as we were in the show, Tom Breeze and Antonio Arroyo was cancelled because of an underlying medical issue with Tom Breeze. So the card actually opened with the Montana De La Rosa versus Ariana Lipski fight, and it was a really interesting fight to open the card with. De La Rosa basically was trying to use her wrestling skills to beat a hard-hitting opponent in Ariana Lipska, and it paid absolute dividends off for her. It started off quite patient at the beginning, both women landing some good shots, but Lipska was a little bit more powerful on the feet, so De La Rosa was able to drag Lipska's body to the floor and really keep control of Lipska on the ground. Lots of pressure, able to attack from the back with punches, and the short elbows. There's a really decent elbow close to the end of the first round, which ends up cutting Lipski's head. Plenty of blood streaming out of there. The first round ends with De La Rosa fully dominant on the ground. Second round, and Lipski knew she had to kind of pressurize and start landing some of her big shots, and she was able to straight away, and it rocked Montana De La Rosa. But for Montana, she was able to duck the following shots and able to score the second takedown, able to slow the pace of the fight, able to regain her composure and control the fight yet again on the floor. This time she was looking for more of a submission, was able to transition into side control, using her arm to control Lipski on the floor, again with those short elbows, and was able to again reopen the cut on Lipski's face. De La Rosa did attempt for the arm triangle, but Lipski was able to pull away from that, so De La Rosa just transitioned into mount and just started punching from off the top, and with Ariana Lipski was just had nothing to combat that, and Keith Peterson stopped the fight with about a minute to go, and De La Rosa picked up a well-earned victory. Going into the second fight on this card, we had Gregory Rodriguez taking on Dusko Todorovic. Rodriguez making his UFC debut, taking this fight on very late notice. I think the commentary said he had a fight just a couple of weeks ago, so very, very brave of him to step into the octagon and face an opponent of the power of Dusko on such short notice. And it's, again, it's something that's paid absolute dividends for him. He came into the beginning of the fight. Todorov tried to control the centre of the octagon, tried to control the pace of the fight. But Rodriguez really kind of like showing his kind of like all-round game. He was able to use beautiful judo style throws to get Todorovic off his feet, and when he landed his shots they were really crisp, and he just seemed to have a lot more pace behind his shots. All in all, throughout the fights there was not really a point where I'd say that any of the fighters felt like they were in too much danger, but you could see that the crisper shots, and the slightly higher volume of shots from Rodriguez was winning him this fight. Todorovic was still able to land some of his own shots, but the place where he struggled was being controlled by Rodriguez. He was able to when he felt ready, he was able to shoot for takedowns and was able to land them pretty much whenever he wanted. Todorovic was quick to be able to get back to his feet, and there wasn't many times where Rodriguez was able to keep Todorovic down on the floor, but he was able to clinch well against the fence and control Dusko up against the cage. But when they did break away, it was Rodriguez's shots that looked crisper, that looked cleaner, that had more power in them, and that really kind of it swayed the judges, and with two of the judges giving all three rounds to Gregory Rodriguez, good victory for him. And to come into the UFC on your debut like that and make such an impression, well done to him. Then after that, we went into the welterweight division with Miguel Baeza and Santiago Ponzinibbio facing off. A lot of hype recently around Santiago Ponzinibbio. He's been getting a lot of praise on UFC, with him getting his own kind of like mini documentaries. And to be fair, this may well be one of the best fights that you'll see in a long, long time. Started off incredibly bright. Both guys have had a pretty similar game plan. Both wanted to land leg shots, both wanted to land the left and right hooks. And these guys there was no kind of airs and graces about it. They wanted to just swing and damage their opponents. First round, Santiago, it looked like he struggled to get into his game because he was getting chopped with those leg kicks. The welts were showing up really, really quickly on the calf, and then when Miguel started going towards the quads, it made such a big difference, and you could see that Ponzinibbio was really, really struggling. But the thing is, he's got some hard punches, and he was able to land quite a few of them. But fair play to Miguel Baeza, he was giving punches straight back. So for me, I thought Miguel Baeza looked the better fighter in the first round. Coming into the second, and Ponzinibbio went straight for the pressure as he did in the first. But he was landing a lot more of his shots in this opening exchange in the second round. Baeza was moving really well and landing shots of his own, but just didn't seem to have a lot of the power that Santiago had. Baeza carried on his kicks to the legs, and you could see that it was now becoming a struggle for Santiago to put pressure on that lead leg, which meant he was not able to get the power that he was looking for. But he absolutely powered through and was just swinging, throwing in, putting in as much power as he could into his shots, and he was landing a lot of those shots as well. Started throwing his own kind of leg kicks and high kicks, which did a lot of damage. Baeza went to take the fight to the ground, but Santiago was able to sprawl and block that. Landing some big lefts and was really kind of doing a lot of damage towards the end of the second round. Coming into the third, and again, Santiago wanted to press the pace. Started with with lots of jabs. Baeza went back to what was working, the legs. The issue was now that Ponzinibbio started throwing his own leg kicks. And you could see where he was catching Miguel Baeza on the back of the knee, and you could see where his legs were starting to buckle, and that really kind of made Baeza think twice about swinging for those leg kicks. He really kind of slowed down the pace with him. But what Ponzinibbio did was he built up his pace about going for the legs, and then he was following it up with the big left hand, which was, for someone who was such a big fighter going into this fight, his cardio was absolutely outstanding, and the pressure that he put on in this third round really kind of swung it for all the judges. This was the round that essentially separated the fighters, going towards the last minute, and both guys were just swinging for the fences. Both were landing, both had unbelievable chins. Ponzinibbio actually got so into like the brawl at the end that he threw a couple of shots after the klaxon went, but it was separated, and all three judges gave exactly the same score of 29-28 for Ponzinibbio. Really good victory for him. Will it do anything to move up the welterweight ranks? We'll soon see. Going into the fourth fight on this main card, and it was very much the antithesis of the fight that just happened before it. For all the action and attack in that fight, this one was more kind of a chess match. It basically boiled down to Roman De Lidza being able to control Laureano Stiropoli with locking his hands, keeping hold of his back, and then just following him while Stiropoli tried to walk his way around the octagon. Every time that Stiropoli thought he had a chance to break the hold and get some shots in, De Lidza would just cinch up the lock in his arms, get back to the position of holding him and basically following him. It was quite weird that Keith Peterson didn't stop this from happening, because there was very little action from De Lidza. He didn't throw many punches in, if at all, in this first round. Did a lot of the same thing for the second round. Was able to get the takedown early on, but then slips to the back and gets the grip again and starts following the fighter round the octagon, to where they were almost did laps of the octagon rolling against the fence. Again, it was weird how Keith Peterson didn't stop this from happening. It was I didn't understand it. De Lidza really wasn't putting in a lot of work to cause damage to his opponent. This was more just about controlling him and making sure that Stiropoli wasn't able to throw shots. So going into the third, it was, Staropolnin had to do something to break this monotony of being controlled against the cage, and he did well, to be fair. He was able to land a few jabs, able to throw some kicks, landed a couple of high kicks, but Delisa was just trying to do his best to block and duck the shots, and get the clinch again. And yet again, he slips around and takes Staropolnin's back. Staropolnin was just getting so frustrated. There was one point in this third round where you could see that Staropolnin was getting audibly frustrated and trying to almost goad Delisa into striking with him, which didn't happen. But Staropolnin was able to change the position and able to grab the neck, get a few elbows in, get a scramble and a takedown. Get his own almost bit of revenge for taking Delisa's back, and we end the fight as we spent the most of the fight in the clinch. So not the best of fights. All three judges gave the fight 3-0 to Roman Delisa, but yeah, this was certainly the piss break of the fight from this event, especially when you consider that we just maybe witnessed one of the fights of the year, and then we're getting this wrestling contest, I suppose. But going into the co-main event and main event, these were four heavyweight fighters who do not particularly like going further than a first round. An interesting statistic that I read recently was that between the four of them, 91% of their finishes came in the first round, which is just absolutely unreal statistics. So we started with Walt Harris taking on Marcin Tybura. Tybura going into this fight actually as the favourite, even though he was ranked I think 3 or 4 places below Walt Harris. And at the beginning of the fight, you'd struggle to understand why, because after an early front kick by Tybura, Walt Harris lands a couple of big shots, and you could see that Tybura was hurt. Harris swarmed, but the issue was he threw so many punches, and Tybura was able to kind of soak up that pressure, that you could see that Harris was kind of like struggling for the finish almost. Landed another good left hand, and Tybura again was really hurt, but he did the sensible thing and shot for the takedown, which was he was able to land it. Harris did get back to his feet, but it gave Tybura enough time to gather his thoughts, get his breath back. Probably gave Walt Harris the chance to get his breath back as well. Harris breaks the clinch, lands a few more shots to Tybura, but Tybura lands a body kick. Then he catches a Walt Harris kick and was able to trip him to the floor. Gets onto the ground, gets inside control. Harris was able to overpower Marcin Tybura, get back to his knees, but Tybura got onto his back and landed a lot of short punches. But the finish of the fight came when Marcin Tybura was able to actually flatten Walt Harris out and land numerous shots, not huge blows, not painful shots, and not full power, but there were plenty of shots landing over and over, and Walt Harris was doing nothing to kind of like change his position or even to really defend the shots, leaving Mark Smith no real option but to call the fight. Hardly it's hard to call it a knockout because I don't think that Walt Harris took too much damage whilst he was down on the floor. It's just he did nothing to stop the blows coming in, and he did nothing to kind of counteract the blow. So he kind of left Mark Harris no other decision but to call the fight. So after that, we got our main event, Jairzinho Rozenstruik taking on Augusto Sakai. And after watching the weigh-ins, I actually thought Sakai looked the best he's looked in a long, long time. Looked a lot leaner, looked a lot trimmer. And going into this fight, it was quite a pick-em because both these guys have got fairly decent records in recent memory, landing lots of big shots and finishing lots of opponents. So it was interesting to see what was going to happen in this fight. We started and Rozenstruik took the centre of the octagon, and what Sakai was doing was kind of like almost just moving from side to side. Started with some low kicks. Rozenstruik did actually almost catch a low blow, kind of almost like a graze, but Sakai waves it off and we continue. And Sakai just carried on with this kind of like almost lateral circling movement, kind of almost walking rings around Rozenstruik, but Rozenstruik wasn't doing anything to kind of like cut the angles or anything like that. Sakai started with a few leg kicks. Rozenstruik landed a couple of shots but didn't really throw much in this first round at all. Especially in the first couple of minutes, missed a big overhand right, but he was getting kind of peppered with the low kicks. They were really making the difference to in this fight. They were the only thing that was really kind of like point scoring for me. But going into the last couple of minutes or so, Rozenstruik started turning the pressure up a little bit, started landing a few more shots. Missing quite a few shots as well, and that I think that's one of the biggest problems with Jairzinho Rozenstruik, is that he throws some big shots, but he misses a hell of a lot of them. Whether that's because he's easy to telegraph, or whether it's just an issue with how slow he is at throwing his shots, who knows? But he was able to jab. Sakai, which kind of like shook Sakai, shook Augusto, but then it was the follow-up big right kind of overhead looping shot that drops Augusto Sakai to the floor. The camera kind of like almost freeze frames, and we get that slow motion, and you can see basically the laugh leaving Augusto Sakai's body. Rozenstruik sees him drop, lands a few hammer fists just to add an extra bit of stank on it, and with about 3 seconds of the fight to go, Jairzinho Rozenstruik picks up the first round knockout. Where does that take him after this? I mean, he's got to be in the mix for another big fight. I mean, this is a guy who has been quite on and off with UFC recently. I mean, like, he destroyed the likes of Alistair Overeem and Andre Arlovsky and Alan Crowder, Junior Dos Santos, but then when he's come up against the likes of Ngannou, he gets absolutely decimated. When he came up against Cyril Gagne, he looked ordinary, but then in this fight he looked an absolute killer again. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes after this event. But let's quickly look forward to next week's event. We've now got all the fights logged for UFC 263 with a double title co-main and main event. So we've got Paul Craig against Jamal Hill, Damian Maia taking on Bilal Muhammad, the return of Nate Diaz against Leon Edwards. The co-main event is the flyweight title, the revisiting of Davison Figueiredo taking on Brandon Moreno, and then again in another rematch, but one from a couple of years ago, we have middleweight kingpin Israel Adesanya taking on Marvin Vettori. So check in next week to hear the fallout from that show. You can follow me on Twitter at Podfather Mags, follow my missing co-host at Kirby_Carlos, and definitely go and check out the rest of the content on the Shooting the Sports Ish on Chair Shot Media and on Visionaries Global Media. These are three great teams and give us a lot of support and love, so it'd be cool if you went and showed a little bit of love towards those guys. But yep, that is the end. Thank you all for listening.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.